According to IQ Air, a Swiss technology company observing air quality data, in 2021, the World Health Organization, or the WHO, updated their global air quality guidelines in response to the wealth of scientific and medical information that had been accumulated since the last update to these guidelines in 2005. The info revealed that the harmful effects of air pollution on human health occur at exposure levels much lower than was previously known. In an effort to raise awareness, the United Nations General Assembly designated the first International Day of Clean Air for Blue Skies, also known as World Clean Air Day, in September of 2019. According to www.un.org, air pollution is the single greatest environmental risk to human health and one of the main avoidable causes of death and disease globally, with some estimated 6.5 million premature deaths, data as of 2016, across the world attributed to indoor and outdoor air pollution. Obviously, clean air is important for individuals day-to-day throughout the world, while air pollution is the single greatest environmental risk to human health and one of the main avoidable causes of death and disease globally. Thinking about this global issue turns our focus to what's going on locally, between our own actions as individuals, local industry, and of course, continued wildfires. It's no secret that we're not breathing pure oxygen in the airshed of Prince George, BC area, nor are we across the province. But how do we know what's in our air? Clearing away some of the haze on this issue with us today is Dr. Peter Jackson. Peter, what department are you in up at UMBC? What's your line of work?
Well, I'm a meteorologist, and I'm in the Department of Geography, Earth, and Environmental Sciences in the Faculty of Environment, and I'm affiliated with the Natural Resources and Environmental Studies Institute.
You're no stranger when it comes to the topic of air quality. You have been instrumental in setting up a number of air quality monitors on campus itself and developing an interactive map that users could actually look at to see what air quality is, not just in Prince George, correct, but beyond.
Yeah, traditionally, monitors for air quality have been run by government agencies, and they're very accurate, but very expensive. So a typical monitor, for example, for particulate matter, PM2.5, which is the main pollutant we're concerned about, for a government monitor would cost about $30,000 and require a technician to maintain it and calibrate it and this and that. And in the past decade or so, there's been an advent of really low-cost sensors, part of the Internet of Things, coming mainly out of China and Taiwan. And some of them are no good, but some of them are excellent. And so we've been involved for about the past 6 years looking at some of the emerging technologies and low-cost sensors for particulate matter. And we found that some of the monitors, so some manufacturers are putting these new sensors into monitors and selling them for really inexpensive compared with the government monitors. So,
gotcha.
You know, you can, for $300, you can buy a kind of a citizen science low-cost monitor that is nearly as good as the $30,000, you know, gold standard government monitor.
Wow.
And so this has resulted in a real proliferation of these devices by people just buying them on their own because they're curious, but also researchers like me or even government agencies putting together programs to put them all over the place. And so now instead of having a measurement, one measurement in a city, we can have 50 measurements in a city. And so we can look at air quality at the neighborhood scale rather than, you know, at the macro scale.
And get a variance of what is it at this elevation at, say, the university here in Prince George, and what is it at down in the bowl or up in the heart or by the airport, et cetera. And this technology, is it kind of related to smart home devices like intelligent light bulbs, things like that?
Yeah, it's part of the same suite of things, you know, sensors everywhere for everything, and one type of sensor is for air quality. And so, yeah, so these devices typically plug in somewhere, you stick them outside, they report through your Wi-Fi to a central cloud storage location. I've been partnering with Environment and Climate Change Canada to look at what we can learn about dense measurements of air quality. And so we've got a pilot project here in Prince George where we have about 50 of these things around town.
Right.
And one of my graduate students, former graduate students, Braden Nilsson, who now works for Environment Canada, as part of his master's work, put together an interactive map where we display the data from two types of these low-cost monitors. Purple Air is the most popular one, but also Air Quality Egg. And they both use the same sensor out of Taiwan. Alongside the government monitors, the $30,000 governmental monitors. So we put all three types of monitoring on the same map. And we do it across Canada and through the border states as well, so not just in Prince George, but everywhere in Canada. And we also calibrate. So we've done a study where we compare the low-cost monitors with the government monitors.
Okay.
And we come up with a formula to correct them to make them even more accurate. So they already went up and down together, but there was kind of an offset, so we can correct for that offset. And so that we find that in general, they match pretty closely with the government monitors. Not always exactly the same. There's a different monitoring technology. They use a different principle for measurement.
Right.
The low-cost sensors use the scattering of light, laser light, by particles. And the governmental monitors use different methods that are a little bit more accurate.
Yeah. But it brings it down, so it's just a little more accessible.
Yeah, I mean, it's within the ballpark. I mean, when it's really bad anyway, you know, like under the conditions of wildfire like we've had this summer, the smoke from wildfire. In truth, you don't actually need a monitor to know when it's bad outside.
You
can see it, right? But there's lots of times when the particles are too small to see, and you can have levels which are high enough to impact health, but you couldn't tell. Unless you had monitoring to be able to tell you.
The average person can look up the data wherever they are. Typically, what's the air quality in my area today? 2.5 particulate matter. That comes up a lot. What is this exactly?
So particulate matter or aerosols, same thing. These are just solid or liquid things that are floating in the air. And the 2.5 refers to the size, so how big the particle is. So 2.5 means 2.5 micrometers. A micrometer is a millionth of a meter or a thousandth of a millimeter. Right. And so PM2.5 is all the particles less than 2.5 microns in diameter. And it's a weight concentration, so it's mass per volume. So micrograms per cubic meter is what it's measured in.
Right.
We're mostly concerned about the small particles. So the large particles is mainly from dust. And you can see it floating in the air, but it also settles out due to gravity. And if we breathe it in, the larger particles tend to get lodged in our nose or throat or upper respiratory tract.
Okay.
But the very tiny particles, the ones less than 2.5 microns, can get deep into the lungs where they can cause inflammation, even cross into the bloodstream and cause other kinds of health problems. So we know that globally, I mean, there's been lots of studies that have looked at the health impacts of PM2.5. It's the number one pollutant, air pollutant, in terms of its impact on human health. And actually, it's the number one environmental cause of death. And so PM2.5 globally causes about 7 million deaths a year. About half of which is attributable to outdoor air pollution and about half to indoor air pollution, actually.
Fascinating. Indoor pollution as well. Yeah, that's also very curious. You may recall the UN statement that
air pollution is the single greatest environmental risk to human health and one of the main avoidable causes of death and disease globally.
So it's not just about your outdoor environment. You also want to take care of the stuff in your own home as well, if you can.
It's what you're breathing. And in truth, the indoor air pollutants are generally highest where folks use biomass for cooking.
Interesting.
So it's mainly if you're burning wood or coal or peat or whatever inside for cooking, and it's mainly in kind of developing world where it's a huge issue.
Right.
It's not as much of an issue in the developed world, although cooking with gas isn't the greatest either for that point of view.
Of course. Because any fossil fuel will have like an emission of some kind that involves this particulate matter.
Anything you burn creates particles and gases as well. But but the PM tends to be the one that we're mostly focused on in terms of its impact on a broad scale on human health.
When we're looking at these websites, for example, one of the top Google searches will bring up IQ Air, for example. That's a Swiss technology company that happens to be involved in air monitoring. It's fairly easy to read. Honestly, most of them are pretty easy to read, but IQ Air is one of the ones that seems to rise to the top of the pile right now. Basically, the way it breaks it down is to look at the PM2.5 and then multiplies it by a certain number. Today's air quality on the site registers the air quality index at 75 US AQI, main pollutant being PM2.5. And the PM2.5 concentration is currently 4.7 times the WHO annual air quality guideline value. So, you know, whether this is precisely accurate or not, what the website is saying is that we are 4.7 times the more or less agreed upon safe level.
Yeah.
Of that matter.
And so a couple of things there to tease apart. So first of all, so a lot of agencies have indexes of air quality. So I mentioned that PM2.5, its raw measurement is in micrograms per cubic meter, so mass per volume. You know, a lot of agencies feel that's kind of hard for the public to understand, but these units, because different pollutants have different units, like parts per billion, parts per million, micrograms per meter, et cetera. So they'll put them into an air quality index. They'll put it into a formula and come up with a number on a scale, like 1 to 100 or 1 to 10.
Gotcha.
So the AQI is a U.S. creation, the air quality index. And it takes, I forget the exact formula, but it takes different pollutants and scales them on a 0 to 100 scale and gives you a number. We don't use it in Canada. We use the air quality health index in Canada, the AQHI. And the AQHI actually takes three pollutants. It takes PM2.5, which is what we've been talking about, but also ozone, that's O3, it's a gas,
okay,
and NO2, nitrogen dioxide. So both of those are other, those are gaseous pollutants that also have an impact on human health. It puts them into a formula and combines them and put and comes up with a 10-point scale. So 0 or 1 to 10 and 10 plus. These low-cost monitors only measure one of the three pollutants. So to get the air quality health index correctly, you need to have a station where all three pollutants are monitored. So in Prince George, the government monitor of the Plaza 400 building downtown does that, and it produces the air quality health index value. We've also studied the health impacts of PM2.5 on its own. And so researchers at the BC Center for Disease Control feel that if you have PM2.5 from 0 to 10 micrograms per cubic meter, it's got the equivalent health messaging as an AQHI of 1. 10 to 20 is like an AQHI of 2, and so on. 90 to 100 is like an AQHI of 10, which is bad.
Okay.
Anything from 7 to 10 is pretty bad. Anything over 100 is like an AQHI of 10 plus. So our map, the one that we've created, my graduate student, we use the same color coding as the AQHI, which is what the Government of Canada uses.
Right, okay.
Even though we don't measure all three pollutants, just with PM2.5 alone, the messaging would be the same if you scale it that way.
Understood. As far as what the typical average citizen might be referring to, IQ Air is available, Purple Air is available, and that kind of feels like it's a little more locally sourced to Prince George itself, if we're focusing on our municipal district. And then there's a really nice air quality map through the UMBC site, cyclone.umbc.ca. Do you have a favorite site, or is there one that, is there a point of reference that you kind of feel like is probably easiest for the average person to understand before heading out to do a jog or
go about
their day?
So the Purple Air site, so the Purple Air is the most popular monitor.
Gotcha.
And so they have only their own monitors on their site, and they default to the air quality index. But you can select raw PM2.5, and you can apply corrections by choosing different things on their menu.
Okay.
So the UNBC site, the Cyclone site, which we also have an easier URL for now, so it's just aqmap.ca.
Gotcha.
So okay. If you just go to aqmap.ca, that brings up our site. That was the one that was developed by my graduate student, Braden Nilsson. We incorporate the Purple Air data, so all the stations on the Purple Air site, plus the Air Quality Egg data, another low-cost monitor, plus the government data all on one site with different symbols for each type of monitor. And then we also apply that correction that we did the research on that makes the low-cost monitors look the same as the gold standard monitors.
Right.
And we don't use the Air Quality Index. We just report it as an actual PM2.5 value in micrograms per cubic meter.
Understood.
But we use the coloring scale that the Air Quality Health Index uses.
Right.
So we like our site best, of course.
Yeah, naturally.
And we can also have layers. We can add, topographic layers, but also layers for active wildfires, wildfire boundaries, and models of PM2.5 from wildfires. So if you're looking at wildfire stuff, we can add layers that show those things spatially as well.
That's a nice segue into, the other crucial point of this air quality conversation. How long have you been monitoring the air quality at this level, I guess?
Yeah, we started using the Purple Air monitors in really an air pollution class that I teach, ENSC 412, 612, back in 2017 is when they first came to my attention, 2016, 2017.
Okay.
And the class got three of them, and we did some experiments with them and looked at them. And we realized they worked pretty well, surprisingly right. Well for the price. And so that kind of initiated the broader work, putting about 50 or so around Prince George, but also reaching out to other communities to put them in underserved areas. So think about small towns or First Nations communities who don't have monitoring but are severely impacted by wildfires, for example, and smoke from wildfires, which is high in PM2.5. So we've put them all over the place, partnering mainly with Environment and Climate Change Canada. But really for that, about the past 6 or 7 years, kind of doing a lot of work with that low-cost sort of citizen science technology that actually works really well.
Yeah. I imagine each year you've probably added, more monitors to each area year after year, so each year you have more data compared to the last. But adjusting for that, looking over the scale since 2017, has there been more pollutants detected year after year, or has it kind of gone up and down, or what is it kind of?
Yeah,
kind of like?
I mean, if we think about Prince George, for example, so Prince George, has different sources of particulate matter. So there's particulate matter that we all produce as part of our daily lives, you know, driving cars, running on the road, dust from various things, running our barbecues, running our lawnmowers, even smoking or backyard fires.
Sure.
Fires in our fireplaces, all that kind of stuff produces particulate matter. But also industry as well is a major emitter of particulate matter. So,
of course.
And then we don't have wildfires every year. Mm-hmm. We seem to be getting a lot more frequently. You know, that's another discussion perhaps. But some years we aren't really affected by wildfire smoke. But when we are, it has a dominant impact on the annual average. So if we filter out the years where wildfires are a big deal, we find that generally in Prince George, the trends are downward. So we're actually, our quality is improving. The PM2.5 levels are going down.
Hmm.
And that's driven mainly by improvements that industry have made over the years, especially the pulp mills. They've put in a lot of new technologies and made changes to processes. And one of the pulp mills, the line shut down a little while ago.
Right.
And, you know, certain other emitters, like some sawmills, have burned down and are no longer emitting, pellet plant, et cetera. So we're seeing improvements in normal air pollution, PM2.5.
Gotcha.
But, of course, everything gets blown out of the water when we have a year like this year, mm-hmm. or 2017 or 2018, where we have got heavy wildfire smoke. Just to put numbers on things, the annual average in Prince George is around 8 micrograms per cubic meter in a typical year, around 8, which is pretty close to the WMO standard.
Okay.
And the standards are going down over time as well. But, you know, when we have bad smoke, it's over 100.
Yeah.
There's also a 24-hour threshold for issuing an air quality advisory. So BC Environment issues an air quality advisory when the 24-hour average is 25 or higher. But again, when we're under smoke, we're getting 100, 200, 300, 80, 90, 70. So many times the threshold for issuing an air quality advisory. So the smoke from wildfires is outrageously high,
right,
compared with even bad air under normal circumstances.
Thank you so much for spending the time with us today to explain how air quality is being monitored in our area and the ways in which it's changing.
Well, thanks for having me. And remember, aqmap.ca, if you want to know what's happening, you can zoom into your area.
Ian Gregg with CIFA Radio, 88.7 FM in Prince George, British Columbia, broadcasting on Klaylee Tenay traditional territory. This segment was produced with the assistance of the CRFC via Heritage Canada and the Local Journalism Initiatives Fund.